Hey everybody, I'm Taylor Onion and you're listening to The Bloom Pod, the show where we use the power of storytelling to share the insights of entrepreneurs, educators, and sports professionals who are chasing big dreams. We spend time asking guests about the experiences they've had that have helped them bloom into who they are today. Today's guest has one of the most interesting career paths I think we've seen to date. He is a NASA engineer turned football coach. Please enjoy our conversation with Tony Holt. All right, Tony, Coach Tony, I'm so excited to have you on today. A coach, former athlete, former teacher, former NASA engineer, so many different things. And we got to hear how those all kind of combine to come together. So let's get this thing kicked off, you know, by having you share a little bit about what brought you here today.
First of all, I want to thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. I'm a big fan of yours. I listen to your podcast. I think you do tremendous work for the community as well as the industry. So I just want to thank you and commend you and, you know, ask you to continue to do what you're doing because it's a good thing. Okay, so I'm a product of New Orleans, Louisiana, born and raised through and through. I probably believe there's probably no one on the face of this earth that does not love Louisiana more than I do. I think Louisiana is the greatest place God ever created. I'm just going to go on and put it out there and just say that. But I'm born and raised in New Orleans, Louisiana. I went on to play college ball at UL Lafayette. Played there, and I started out majoring in mechanical engineering. After the first year, I was kind of like, it's kind of like boring. It just wasn't my field. So I went to my athletic counselor. And he was like, well, Tony, you know, I'm looking at your test scores. I'm looking at your grades. Like, you make great grades and great test scores. He was like, have you looked into any other forms of engineering? I'm like, no, I just thought mechanical was it. So he pulled out the list of majors that UL had, and industrial engineering was one of them. So I did my research and I looked into it and I was like, ooh, this looks pretty cool, right? It's the ability to apply theories to practical use as opposed to just working on theories, right? So I was like, ooh, this is pretty interesting. So I decided to pursue a degree in that. And I had got a degree in that. And right before it was time for me to graduate, the DFO at UL came to me and was like, Tony, look, everybody here loves you. You're great for the program. Have you ever thought about GA, getting a graduate degree? You don't have to be a coach, but you can get a grad degree and still help us out around here. So I thought about it a little while and I said, you know what? Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to apply for a couple of jobs. And if I get a job offer before it's time to accept this graduate position, I will take the job. If not, I will, you know, do the grad school thing. Well, lo and behold, a company by the name of Northrop Grumman out in El Segundo, California, they build the F-18 fighter jets. It's kind of like the old Blue Angels. The F-18 fighter jet.
Okay.
So they called me up and asked me to interview for a job. They were going to fly me out to California, Los Angeles. They were going to put me up for 2 days. I'm thinking to myself, oh, shucks, this is amazing. I get to go to L.A. for 2 days and I only have to interview for one. Oh, I'm going to take this. So I interviewed. And the whole time I'm thinking, like, I don't know about this. Like, come on. I'm an inner city kid from New Orleans. They're going to hire me to be a part of this program. The second day I was out there, I hung out, went to visit some places. And then it was time for me to board the plane. So I get a call on my cell phone. Now, this is back in the day where you had to pay for your minutes. So I was real selective as a college student who I picked up, right? So if your name was not in my phone, I probably wouldn't have not picked it up. However, I saw it was an LA number, and I was like, I better pick this up. Well, they offered me the job there. And I took it. It was a great opportunity. What I worked on was the fuel cell. The gas tank, right? It leaked fuel, and it was a manufacturing mess up, right? So I was a part of a team that led the retrofit or to fix that fuel cell from leaking. You're talking thousands of aircrafts, 20 or 30 states, six different countries. So I was a part of the team that led to retrofitting that problem with the entire fleet of the F-18 fighter jet. So that was really fun. And I always, when I got there, when I took the job and I talked to the guys I worked with, after you become friends with someone, you kind of, get personal with them. And I asked them, I said, why? Let me ask you guys this. Why did you guys hire a football player from inner city New Orleans to come out and work on this team for Northrop Grumman? And the guy said it plainly simple. He said, Tony, he said, you are a team player. He said, your upbringing, athletics, your ability to work with different personalities, your ability to articulate yourself, and you're a leader. And he was like, we drastically needed that on this team. And I thought, wow, I didn't really view myself. I didn't think about it that serious. I never viewed playing athletics as something that was a plus as opposed to a minus. You always grow up in athletics and be, oh, that's the football players. Oh, they get special treatment. Oh, they get this, and dumb jocks, and all of these stereotypes. Well, in the world outside of athletics, in the industry, right, people view this as a plus. I never really understood that, some Americans have hurdles when working with teams because they have never been a part of a team. So I never viewed it as a plus until I got out there. And I was like, man, this is really cool. It's something that kind of comes out and you're like, okay, I'm glad I was a part of this, right? So I'm working out in LA, having a good time, enjoying life. But I always had this urge to want to get back in coach. I don't know what it is. I'm making good money. Life is good. I don't have any problems. Like, small problems, but nothing drastic, right? So one of the people in the industry talked about how NASA was hiring a slew full of new engineers. And they were like, Tony, there's a lot of opportunities in your hometown in New Orleans. In New Orleans, I don't know of any. I never knew of a NASA plant in New Orleans. Just to show you how sheltered of a life I live, the Michu Facility Center is literally 2 minutes from my high school. You could jog from my high school to the Michu facility. And I never knew it was there. Never knew. So I looked into it. They gave me the number. I kind of called HR and talked to them because in my mind, here's an opportunity for me to go back home, work for NASA, and I should be able to volunteer coach, and that should satisfy my itch of wanting to coach football. I just thought it was an itch, right? It's just funny how God takes an itch and turns it to a passion, right? So I get the job. It was unbelievable. So Lockheed Martin, which is a subcontractor at NASA, hired me to help facilitate building the external fuel tank. If you can remember the old space shuttle, right? That orange tank that's in the middle. Well, that's basically the gas tank.
Okay.
That particular tank is what we were responsible for manufacturing and building. Okay. That tank is put together in four different stages. It's welded, the front and the back. The middle, where they got those little ridges, that's mechanically put together, right? So you have two welded parts, two mechanical parts. You have a section that's called final assembly, where they merge the three sections together, all right? And then the last thing is where they spray the foam off, all right? So this was what we were responsible for building, right? So I don't know if you remember, they had a disaster that happened that canned the space shuttle for a while. And what happened was that the orange tank, right, that carries the fuel has foam on it. The foam fell off, hit the undercurrent of the belly of the space shuttle, right? When it was coming back into the Earth's atmosphere, gases and stuff build up, and that's when the disaster happened.
Oh my
so gosh. We were responsible for finding ways to stop that from happening. So we had a bunch of older engineers who were trying to stop foam from falling off the tank. Well, that doesn't make any sense because the tank was designed for foam to fall off. Why? You have less gas, right? It has to get lighter because you don't have as much gas to take it up out of the Earth's atmosphere. So a younger engineer decided, well, hey, how about we not stop it from falling off? Let's just allow it to fall off at smaller chunks where it doesn't affect the space shuttle. And that idea took off. And I'm going to go to where I fit into all of this. So they decided, how do we make this tank allow for foam to fall off without coming off in large chunks? Well, they decided to, hey, what if the tank shift and moved, right, slightly to where it allowed it to fall off in smaller chunks? So they came up with a method called a friction stir weld method. If you think about welding, you think about tack welding with the big old deal and the tacks and grinding. So they developed a method to where they took this metal pin and they took two forms of metal together and they friction stir welded together. What does that allow the tank to do? It allows it to be flexible.
Okay.
Well, I was in charge of the welding department in that particular process when it came to industrial engineering purposes, which was really, really astonishing to me, really, really fun. I keep a piece of metal in my office. The first pass of the friction stir weld is like this smaller chunk is kind of history was being made, right?
Right.
So I was a part of that process. And while working at NASA, right, I volunteered coach at my old high school, two minutes down the road. Well, I worked there for a couple of months and Hurricane Katrina happened, right? Shut the entire city down. No one knew what was going to happen. I was kind of nervous. I was like, man, I got this great job. I don't know what's going to happen. Well, NASA decided to continue to pay us because they didn't want to lose the personnel, right? It was towards the end of the project. They didn't want all of that knowledge being lost. So they still paid us. Well, football in New Orleans was obsolete because obviously Hurricane Katrina happened. And I had a friend that called me up from the Army Corps of Engineers. He was like, hey, Tony, we have all these cleanup projects going on. We're looking for environmental safety engineers. Would you be interested? I'm not doing anything. I can't go to the, because at this point in time, the military, United States government was using the NASA facility to house military officiants and just help keep security in the city of New Orleans. So I couldn't, we weren't allowed back there. So I took that job working with the Army Corps of Engineers as an environmental safety engineer. So I worked there for a couple of months. And then when they allowed us to come back on the facility, I left that job and went back to working for NASA. So I had three separate engineering jobs before I got into coaching. So how does that bridge into coaching?
Right.
My old high school didn't open back up. So there was a position in Mandeville High School, which is a suburb of New Orleans. I started working there as a volunteer assistant coach. Coaching the offensive line with the running game and all those things. So I'm working there.
That's still in addition to you working at the NASA job, right?
That's correct. Okay. So okay. I would go to work at 6 a.m. working for NASA. I would leave at about 3:00, start practice at Mandeville, and then I would get home about 7 or 8 o'clock at night.
Okay. Oof, long days.
So, well, trying to scratch this itch of being a coach, that itch turned into a passion. I realized how much fun I was having, how much I enjoyed it. And I was like, hey, all right, God, this is what I really want. My spiritual life is very important to me. My spirituality is not perfection, it's imperfection, right? So I never claim to be perfect. So I'm praying like, God, I really want to do this. If this is for me, right? Give me a sign. So I'm going through my day and I see that there's a job opening at Warren Easton High School in New Orleans for head football coach. Now, I've only been coaching for 1.5 years because the Hurricane Katrina year cut it short, right? So I decided to apply and I said this little prayer. I said, God, if this is for me, open a door. If it's not, leave it closed. Well, 2 weeks later, I get a call and it's the AD saying, hey, we want to, you say you apply for the job, we'd like to interview you. I'm totally blown away, right? I don't know the inner dealings of New Orleans when it comes to networking with ADs and principals. I'm just blown away. So I pull up to Warren Easton High School, and as I'm about to get out the car, I say the same prayer again. God, if it's for me, open the door. If it's not, don't offer it to me, right? So I get into the office and there are like 4 coaches lined up on a wall waiting to interview. And I know some of these guys. Some of these guys have been coaching a long time. And I was like, all right, God, is this you trying to show me, you know, what it's not supposed to be? So anyway, I'm the last to interview. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, I don't know what's going to happen. So I get in the interview and it's the principal, it's both assistant principals and athletic director. And the woman, the principal is a woman, a lady by the name of Alexina Mem. She's from, born and raised from the Bahamas. She is one of the most intelligent, ferocious individuals I've ever met in my life. She's like a mother to me now. She's my second mother. So I'm interviewing and I think everything is going good. And she's writing on a piece of paper, sliding it to everyone on the desk. And I'm thinking to myself, this is not good. If she's sitting here writing notes, passing it to people, this is not going to happen.
Right. In plain sight. Like you can see.
In plain sight. I'm like, this is not a good thing. So I'm proceeding on. I think I am rolling. I think I have a room. I think I'm doing a great job. And she stops and she goes, excuse me, Coach Hall, you can stop. And I go, oh my God. I said, this has never happened to me before. I've been stopped in the middle of the interview. She said, you can stop right now. She said, I want you to know the job is yours if you want it. I was like, she was like, but here's one thing I want you to understand before you take this position. You're no one's head coach. You're my head coach. So if you have a problem with anybody, you let me know. I'm the one hiring you. And I was like, whoa.
Right.
So she offered it to me. I was like, I'll take it. She was like, now, before you take it, she was like, this is a public school in the city of New Orleans. There's no way that we can pay you what you're making right now. And I was like, ma'am, if I was in this for the pay, right, I would be here.
Right.
Because that urge, right, that itch became a passion. Let's rewind for a second. Let me tell you how passionate I was. I'm coaching at Mandeville. And I'm like, I really want to do this college coaching thing. And I see that Tulane University has hired a new head coach. He's going to remain nameless, but he's no longer coaching. He's from out of California, right? He's no longer coaching. So I said, oh, here's my opportunity, right? This is before the Warren Easton thing happened. So I'm driving with my resume in hand. I'm like, he's on Tulane's campus. I can knock on the door and get his attention. Well, I walk into the football office and he's sitting there talking to his secretary. So I'm like, man, look at God. Like, this is perfect. This is what it's supposed to be like. So I hand him my resume. I explain to him who I am. And he looks at my resume. He said, you're an engineer at NASA? I was like, yes, sir. I said, but here's the deal. I want to coach collegiately so bad, I will work for free. I have a nest egg saved up. Whatever you need, I will work for free. You don't even have to pay me a full-time position. I just want to be a part of your staff. So he thanks me. He shakes my hand. And as I'm walking out, I hear him balling up my resume. And I turn around and he's throwing it in the trash can. So I said to myself, all right, Tony, here's what you need to do. You don't have a great network. You're already an outsider. You're an engineer trying to be a coach. Yeah. Here's what you have to do. You have to find yourself a program and build that sucker up so big that you force people to come talk to you. because high school recruiting is the lifeline of college football. So in my mind, I need an opportunity where I can build a program so big to where every single coach in the country would want to come walk through my doors. And that's what we did at Warren Easton. That's what made Warren Easton so special.
That's awesome.
People talk about, you know, one of the program directors at NASA, he should start every meeting with the same line. And I used to think to myself, why does he start this meeting the exact same way? He'll come in a room. Now, he's a bright mind. He's a graduate from Harvard, Yale, MIT. You name it. That's who's in a room, right? He would come in a room and start the meeting every single day. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's not recreate the wheel. Let's make it better. And I used to think to myself, what? Every single day I've worked there, every day. Right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's not recreate the wheel. Let's just make it better.
Yep.
So after we became friends and I talked to him, because I became, as industrial engineers, you're kind of labeled as a bean counter, right?
Okay.
Majority of them do not look like it, right? So when you're labeled as a bean counter, when you walk into other areas and other arenas, people view you a certain way, right? Well, I kind of broke every mold that they thought of. So when production people try to pressure industrial engineers on backtracking on what is needed to be done, I was kind of one that came in to, you're not going to push back on me. Like, I'm not going to, right? So this particular manager loved that about me. And production skyrocketed when I took over the welding department, right? So when him and I became friends, I asked him, I said, why do you start every meeting like that? He was like, it's easy, Tony. He was like, everything that we need has already been created. We just need to pull it from different avenues. He was like, you know, we try to create something so brand new. So we don't need to create anything. We just need to pull from different sectors and combine them together.
Right.
To bring a new product forward. He was like, that's why I get people to understand it. That's why right. I say that. So when he said that, I was, whoa, right? So when I took over Warren Easton, I was like, okay, let's not recreate the wheel. Let's just make it better, right? So there's a guy down in New Orleans, who's a legend in high school football. My name is JT Curtis. He's won about 30, 40 state championships. He's probably had the winningest record in the state of Louisiana. It never will be broken. Well, his dad is a graduate of Warren Easton High School. Let's do a little history about. So when I went to take the job at Warren Easton, all of my coaching buddies were like, Tony, no, do not take that job. Like, they haven't been in the playoffs in 20-something years. They haven't won a state championship for 60, 70 years. Like, it's an academic school. Do not take that job. Warren Easton had 1,000 students. They had 770 girls. So they were like, Tony. And it was I'll get to that in a second. But they were like, don't take it. So I took it in because I'm the one that tell me I can't do something, I'll do it. So I went and I visited with JT Curtis. His dad was a Warren Easton alumni. Warren Easton is the oldest public school in the state of Louisiana.
Okay. Right?
So he had a kind heart for me. And I sat down in his office for 5 hours just taking notes. Because Here's the thing. I'm not about to recreate. I'm not about to recreate this wheel.
Right.
I'm just going to take what he says and use it. And he says, Tony, you're going to be successful, and here's why. It's like, well, Coach Curtis, you don't even know me. He was like, I've never in the 40 years of my life had a coach come and humble himself and listen to me speak and take the amount of notes that you would take. He said, if you can continue to be that detailed, right, you would have success. So I said, okay. So I'm at Warren Easton. Now, mind you, I get the job in June, and there's 60 kids on the team. Out of 60 kids on the team, not a single one had ever played high school football. And I had to play a varsity schedule in a district of five teams. Sorry to get so specific, but out of those five teams, this district probably produced 30 to 35 Division I signees a year. All of the big-time NFL guys from New Orleans now, your Leonard Fournette, your Honey Badgers, Trey Turner, those guys were in high school at that time when I'm trying to start this football program.
Okay.
Like, they are the one. They are the district. That is right. The district, right? So that's why everybody said, don't take the job, right?
Right.
So I take it in. I develop processes and procedures that I've learned over the years from engineering to recruit kids, to build a culture of competition, not only on the field, but off the field, but also to develop a culture of nurturing and developing young men. And in 3 years, we turned that program into the USA Today top 25 program in the country.
Wow.
And again, it was nothing I ever came up with myself. It was all of the things that I took from individuals that I learned from. And the beauty about that now, you know, and we'll get into that later, but some of the success I've had in college, people are blown away. Like, it's unfounded success. It's success that if you hear it, people go, oh, that can't be true, right? But what I did, when we built that thing so big, guess who started to walk through the doors? The Nick Sabans, the Urban Meyers, the Les Miles, all of these prominent guys would walk through my doors, our doors at Warren Easton, and guess what? They had to sit down and talk to me. So I'm sitting there. So now, as opposed to taking notes from JT Curtis, I'm taking notes from all of these guys, right? So when I got to the collegiate ranks and I started recruiting and had all of these success, everybody thought I was just this genius, but I'm not really a genius. All I did was take all of the lessons I learned from all of these other guys and applied it to this level. And I've just been blessed to have success so far.
I think, you know, one of the things that's so interesting to me about what you just described, you know, from high school and from college, then up to, you know, engineering, NASA, and then kind of essentially back into the high school space, right, is that it's kind of this full cycle that we don't see often, right, with athletes. It's the, you know, you start off as an athlete and then you get to the workplace and you realize exactly what you said, where it's like, you know, you have the teamwork and you have the communication skills and leadership skills and all these things, and then you learn how to apply them. But what you've done is also taken what you learned at NASA and at all these other engineering stops and applied it back to sport, which I think is not something that we see all the time. So it's super interesting, but I'm curious to know two things. Number one, it's not often that student athletes are successful in engineering majors. I can think of like five people I know off the top of my head, either that wanted to be engineers and couldn't keep up with it due to coursework, or wanted to be engineers and ended up giving up their sport because it just was too crazy, right? They like committed either to sport or committed to academia. So I'm curious to know how that came to be of interest to you, to the point that you're thinking, okay, I'm going to major in this and then I'm going to go make a career out of it. So we'll start there.
So in high school, I have three sisters and a brother.
Okay.
All of them went to private school except me.
Okay.
Eighth grade year, there's a prominent school in New Orleans by a school by the name of Isidore Newman High School. At that point in time, my sister is playing AAU basketball and they're practicing at Isidore Newman. So to stay with me for a second, I would go to her practices. Well, in the middle of her practices, I would, you know, how little kids, I grab a ball and start shooting. You know, if some boys were playing one of the pickup games, I would go play with them. And a coach there, along with a guy by the name of Archie Manning. Saw me. And they approached my dad about me going to Newman for high school. So now this school at the time is probably more, it was like, you're talking, this is 1995, and it's probably $15,000, $20,000 a year.
Okay.
I'm from inner city New Orleans. There's no way my parents can afford this. They're going to give me a scholarship because they want me to play offensive line for his son, a kid by the name of Eli Manning. So I'm a guy to where if you tell me I can't do something, I want to do it. I love underdogs. I come from an underdog background. No one has ever said, here, Tony, let me give you this.
Right.
And I think God has created me that way for a reason. So I had a cousin who I looked up to who was going to a school by the name of Sarah T. Reed High School. At this point in time, there aren't alternative schools. Like when a kid gets put out of school, you go to alternative school. At this point in time, there were no alternative schools. Sarah T. Reed High School was a new high school on the outskirts of New Orleans. So when kids got put out of there, guess where they shipped them?
Okay.
But this was the school that my cousin, who I adored, who I looked up to, was going to. And I wanted to go there. And my mom was not having it. She was not having it. She was like, there's no way. So I'm cutting up. This is an awful time. I am not a rebellious child. I'm usually, right? So my dad, he comes to me, he goes, okay, you want to go to this high school? You can go. He says, but the minute your GPA slips under 3.75, I'm taking you out of the school and you're going to Newman. At this point in time, I've never, ever had anything close to a 3.75. Right. This is what I want to do.
Right.
So I go to Reed and I knock out 4.0s, bang, 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 the first year. Right. Second year, I'm knocking out 4.0s, bang, bang, bang. And we have some type of event where people like a career day, and they're bringing in like chefs and construction workers and those type of thing, hospitality people, because hospitality is huge in New Orleans, right? So the teacher, I'm not paying attention. And one of my teachers goes, Tony, why are you not paying attention? I was like, I don't want to do any of these things. She's like, well, what do you want to do in life? I was like, I want to be an engineer. Because the cousin I look up to, his older brother is a mechanical engineer
okay.
at University of Oklahoma, who plays baseball, who I look up to, right? Oh, and she looks me in my eyes and she goes, students that graduate from here don't go on to be engineers. So I think you need to focus. And in my mind, I go, I'm going to show you.
Yep.
I'm going to show you. And that's the reason why I majored in engineering. Now, when I got to UL and I was in the mechanical part, that's a little more strenuous and I struggled. And the industrial side was not as strenuous. It still was hard as heck, but it wasn't as strenuous as the mechanical side. So, and I fell in love with it.
Okay.
What led me to.
Right. Anything with engineering on the end, mechanical, civil, industrial, anything like that. I'm always in awe of anybody who chooses that as a major or as a profession, because it's just so beyond me. And I think, you know, sciences were never my thing to begin with, but it's just, it's always interesting to me to hear when, you know, people actively kind of select that as majors, as career paths, as all that good stuff. So the second thing that I mentioned, I was curious about is, you know, you kind of made this transition at one time, right, from being a student athlete into the workplace, becoming an engineer, going to work at NASA. And then you think, you know what, let me get back into coaching. So again, kind of that full circle thing. I'm curious to know if at any point it's crossed your mind to go back to the engineering side of things. If you ever get, you know, kind of an itch to go you know, build a gas tank again for NASA or anything like that?
Honestly, there have been times. And just opening myself up to be open and honest, it has been times when there's times of frustration when it comes to coaching. In the industry, you increase productivity by 25%, guess what? You get a promotion or you get recognized. Mm-hmm. You increase employee morale by 15 or 20%, guess what? You get recognized. You get a promotion. In college athletics, you can produce and promotions don't come. And you see guys, or you can see people who get promotions who don't produce at all. And it becomes frustrating. So it's like, why am I doing this? Like, why would I? For example, I was sharing something with a guy in my inner circle. He had me list all of my accolades. And I listed, I was at the University of Kansas, right? Kansas usually is not known for football. And one of the line items I listed was got University of Kansas recruiting ranking up to number 2 in the country. 8 recruits, 6 of them were directly from me. And he goes, Coach, I can't put that on there. I was like, well, why? He goes, people won't believe it. Well, I saved Beauty About Technology. I saved that webpage. And sure enough, it had University of Kansas, number 2 ranked team in the country, recruiting wise. And he goes, Coach, if you wouldn't have saved this, I would not have used it. He's like, because this is mind blowing. Well, one of those guys in that recruiting class was Jamar Chase. Cincinnati Bengals right now.
Right.
So when you produce, right, at a high level, there's 2 University of Kansas, the starting running back and the backup running back are currently on NFL roster, Khalil Herbert and Puka Williams, right? That's unheard of at the University of Kansas football, to have the starter and a backup on the NFL roster. Mm-hmm. That was the room I created, right? When you achieve so much and the accolades or the opportunity, because here's the thing, I never want anything handed to me. Whenever you're not presented an opportunity to compete on a promotion, it gets frustrating because the industry you come from automatically rewards you for it.
Yeah. That's one of the interesting things about higher education in general, right? It's not there's, I think we see a lot more of it in college athletics, and we're seeing a big exit there right now from people that are coaching and administrators and beyond. But that's something about higher education that's always been interesting to me, because people who are in, you know, student facing roles, whether it's coach or administrator, advisor, whatever it is, are literally the lifeblood of higher, you know, of institutions, right? Like people who teach, people who help make sure that students are in the right majors and going to graduate on time and all these things. And those somehow are always the lowest paid employees. And it's just the most, you know, thankless jobs kind of across the board. So that's always been interesting to me. I can definitely see how that would be, you know, something that makes you think about, you know, should I go back and be doing what I was doing before? So, yeah.
And again, I'm not looking for, I'm never looking for someone to just be like, here.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm looking for someone to say, okay, here's a guy who has produced, who has the education background, who has the production background, who has worked in different entities that can interchange with what we need. Let me give him the opportunity to, let me allow him the opportunity to interview or compete for a particular position.
Yeah. Which happens, as you're saying, that happens in corporate America, but again, not in higher education, not in college athletics. It's it's a bizarre space because you have educators teaching students and teaching student athletes. You got to go out there and advocate for yourself, fight for yourself. You work really hard and it pays off. And students, and you know, they might go on and do that in the corporate world, but then the people, exact people who are telling them, teaching them those lessons and telling them how to get to that space are not doing that either for themselves or the, you know, whoever, whatever's happening. So it's kind of a crazy, it's just a crazy thing to think about. But all right, we gotta roll here for time purposes. I could sit here and talk about this kind of stuff all day, but I want to kind of move into the final phase of the show here. So the question I want to ask you is, what is one experience or maybe even a series of experiences that you've had that you feel like has helped you bloom into the person you are today?
Ooh, that is a really, really good question. I can think of one particular situation where I was, in college, and it was one of those nights where I was frustrated. I had too big, because see, in the engineering field, test wasn't the thing that really got to me. It was the papers. It was, and I had this huge paper on metals, right? Metals, while working the engine, the welding for NASA, right? And I was so frustrated. And I was praying, and I was like, man, look, I'm done with this. Like, this is too, my friends are partying. I'm stuck in the dorm. Like, I'm done with this. And that little voice said, Tony, just keep pushing. Just keep pushing. I was like, man, I'm tired. So here's what you do. You take a 30-minute nap. You wake back up and you keep pushing. And I took a nap for 30 minutes and I woke up and it's like, another part of my brain was activated and I knocked that thing out. And at that point, that was the time where I was like, you know what? I'm just going to give this up. Like, this is too much.
Right.
But that ability to push on, I have taken and applied it to every time in my life when I wanted to be like, you know what? I could go back to this. Or I can do that. When the easier option was to just to leave it alone, and 95% of America would have agreed with the decision, right? Yeah,
right.
But I decided to keep pushing. That situation right there sticks out to me. And one other situation, I went to church. I was coaching at Warren Easton, and things had just gotten really good. And my pastor asked me to come up, and she prayed for me, and she says, Tony, you know, God has put a mantle on your shoulders, and that's to inspire other coaches to do better. You're going to be an inspiration to coaches. And I'm thinking to myself, okay. Like I said, I'm working on my faith. I'm thinking like, okay. Right.
Whatever you say.
Well, I got to Kansas. I went from a high school head coach to a Power Five position job at Kansas. And when I started to have success, I would come home and recruit Louisiana. And majority of high school coaches I met just be like, Tony, man, you're such an inspiration. Man, you inspired us. Man, this is amazing. And every time they use the word inspire, I think about that prophecy that my former pastor gave me. And those two situations are instrumental in my life.
That's awesome. Those are two good ones for sure. For sure. All right. I'm going to move into now. This is the kind of tail end, the anchor leg, if you will, of the show. And it's the quick peel. So I've got these kind of this or that questions I'm going to ask you, and then we'll wrap things up. So the first one, being, you know, born and raised in New Orleans, I have to ask, favorite beignet place. So the ones that I'm aware of, Cafe Beignet or Cafe Du Monde. And if you got another one.
Oh, this Cafe Du Monde. It's just original. You got to go with the original. You can't deviate from what you can't. I'm old faithful. Cafe Du Monde, you can get it early in the morning You can get it in the afternoon. You can go out, hang out, have a party, and then have need a snack before you go to bed. Cafe Duval.
Yep. Now, I got to tell you, that's the question that prompted me to go and look at flights to New Orleans this afternoon, Mike, as I'm putting this together. All right. Next one is, what is one thing that you want your name to be associated with?
Nurturing and developing young men.
Okay. That's awesome.
I want when people say Coach Hall to be like, man, he was great for young men.
Yep. That's awesome. A show that you've binged lately.
Oof. I don't know if I want to admit it, but I probably have to admit it. It's my wife's.
Okay.
I play with all of her. Okay. She makes me binge watch Bridgerton.
Ooh,
no,
okay.
Don't judge me. Don't judge me. I lost all my cool points just now. I know. It's okay. I'll take it. But.
No judgment at all. I just finished season two, I think last week maybe, but it's a compelling, you know, it's compelling storylines.
It is. I hate to admit it, but it is.
Right. Okay, if you could have any job in the world, what would it be?
To be a Division I Power 5 head football coach.
Okay.
The amount of people you can impact, not just student athletes.
Yep.
All of the individuals you talked about in athletics who feel like they're not heard, who feels like they're not valued. The amount of impact you can have on donors in an entire institution by having a successful program. That's why.
Yep. Yeah. It's a far reach for sure. Last one here. This is a fill in the blank. Blooming is blank.
Blooming is coming from a seed, being buried by soil, being nurtured, pushing through, and blossoming into what God intended to what it's supposed to be.
I think that is the most literal answer that we've had to that fill in the blank since we started doing it. And I love it. I don't know if
that's a good thing or a bad thing.
No. It is. Because usually, you know, it's just like kind of a one word response. But it was an engineering. It was a guy with an engineering background who just came up with that response. I love it. That's awesome. Well, Tony, thank you so much for taking the time out today to join me on the Bloom Pod. It's been great to put a face with a name and to get to know you a little bit better.
Thank you so much. I've had so much fun. This has been enlightening to share my story and to just talk with you. The most important thing I enjoyed about the interview is the fact that you love New Orleans. We're just going to put that out there.
Yep, it's there.
Say that.
It's there.
Just thank you for this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.